The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Dr. Eleanor Galvin, our resident GP, is with us. Any questions for Eleanor? 53106 or 087 1400 106. And Eleanor, I'm sorry to begin with this, but it's what somebody has asked. I have been constipated for a week eating fibre, says the text. I drank prune juice. I'm taking a suppository. How many days should I take it? Do people come to you often with that kind of query?
I think if you're constipated for a week, you're probably pretty bunged up at this stage. You should probably... I have no idea what age they are, if this is normal for them or how they ended up being so constipated. It would be worth going down to the chemist and maybe getting something a bit stronger. I don't know what kind of suppositories they have, but Movacol, yeah, I think you have to have a script for it, could move any sort of mountain, fibre gel, and then take a very large amount of it and have a very good clean out. And then maybe if it happens to you again, go to your GP, make sure that you don't have some sort of blockage or some sort of issue going on. Because that might be a bit of a red flag to be getting that sort of change in your bowel habit. Now, it might have been they'd been very dehydrated or something like that. But a week is a long time for not to have a poo.
Words have rarely been said. Another one says, will it be quicker to see a dermatologist privately and do I have to be referred by a doctor? Now, this is one that I'm intrigued by because there are a series of referral professions like physios, like dermatology, like osteos, all of those where it's very difficult to tell, do you go direct, how do you go direct, or do you go to the GP?
You can't really go direct to people unless it's maybe cosmetic, because somebody has to take kind of ownership of the management of you afterwards. So the consultant writes back and says, you know, Anton has a very strange rash. I've tried this cream. If that doesn't work, give him that cream. If it doesn't, gets bigger, worse, send him back to me. Or may say, please follow up with some autoimmune blood tests and send them back to me. So you have to have somebody to have ownership of that. And that's what the referral letter is, also to make sure it's gone somewhere appropriate. So if somebody comes in and says they want to go and see a dermatologist, but what they have is a mole on their face, they don't really need a dermatologist. They need a plastic surgeon, because whenever they go to the dermatologist, they're going to say, oh, yeah, that does look funny. And we're going to have it taken off. So then they will refer you on to a plastic surgeon. So sometimes it's better to just go to a plastic surgeon first off and have it taken off, sent to a lab and analysed.
This may be a very stupid question, but how do the GPs know which person to go to? Is it like solicitors and senior counsellors? Do you develop relationships with certain people to whom you refer, or is there a list or what?
Well, I think about plastic surgeons, you'll always see their work and it comes back. And some of them have extraordinarily, like you'd never know they took something off someone. And then I'd kind of think, which one would I go to? And then that's where I'd send them. But if somebody comes with what is obviously a malignant looking something and they're saying, what dermatologist? No, it's not a private dermatologist they need. We'll get them in on a 6-week pathway into a malignant mole clinic in a public hospital far faster than you'd get them into a private dermatologist. But if it is concerns about a funny rash or something that's been going on for a while, but that it isn't urgent, then absolutely they get referred to a private. But for some things, public will actually be faster.
Text asking, it is cold and flu season. I'm a 38-year-old male. Should I be getting flu shots, or is it only for those in high-risk cohorts? Presumably, if you don't fancy the flu, have at it.
If you don't fancy the flu, have at it. If you don't want a week off work thinking you're going to die, have a flu vaccine. It's not a live vaccine. Yeah, you might have a sore arm, but it's worth having if you don't want to get the flu. And certainly you may not be vulnerable at 38, but you go home to your 82-year-old mother. Well, then, you know, why don't you get the flu vaccine?
It's not also, the flu is no fun.
Oh, it's no
fun. The flu is no fun.
Proper flu is horrible. And people end up in hospital with proper flu.
Text asking, how is celiac disease diagnosed? Because this is one of those where a lot of people believe they have it when they don't. And those who have it really have it.
Yeah. So celiac disease is diagnosed initially with a blood test, which is pretty accurate. It used to be that accurate, but now it's tested in two ways and it's pretty accurate. So we would test people quite regularly if you're celiac. Just because you're older doesn't mean you're not celiac. Celiac is an autoimmune disease that turns up at all sorts of stages of life. You could diagnose somebody newly at 70 who didn't have it at 60. So it's a blood test. You have it done and then it's confirmed on a gastroscopy. There are implications of not knowing you're celiac and eating gluten-containing foods.
Even tiny, minuscule amounts of
gluten. People have houses with two toasters, one toaster for the non-celiac people and the other toaster for the celiac. So it is very serious. It has implications long-term if it isn't managed properly. So that's why you would have a scope to confirm the diagnosis, but you'd be 99% sure when you'd have your blood test done with your GP. But that doesn't mean you don't need to see a gastroenterologist.
Texas say, can you please ask Eleanor for info on tension headaches? I've had a stinging pain on the left-hand side back of my head yesterday. It was there for hours like a vice, and I hadn't had one for a while, but it's sort of always in the background. I just cope with it with painkillers.
What kind of painkillers are you using? Are you using anything with codeine that you're having a bounce back from it? Are you on screen time all day? Are you reading iPads in your bed and bending your neck? Are you under huge stress? I think if any sort of thing keeps going along, the back of your head is a place you can also get a pain. If you have somebody gets a sudden pain in the back of their head, would be a thing that we'd worry about, bleeds in their head. Now, obviously not, he's well enough to be texting today. But I would think that anything that goes on and on like that, it would be worth a chat. Sometimes if people will take a few salpidine or some sort of codeine containing stuff, and then they'll have a rebound then the next day, and then they think they have a chronic headache.
Well, this is something I've been amazed by this, because I remember a colleague of mine years ago would say, well, salpidine or codeine containing medicines was the only thing that cured their headache.
Oh, I'm going,
I think cause and effect maybe swapped here.
I think so, totally.
Is it still a problem?
Yeah, it is still a problem. But I think people are more aware. I think people are more aware. It's harder to get out of pharmacists as well over the counter, which is a good thing. There are a whole load of better ways to manage headaches. But tension headache, if that's a proper tension headache, it's kind of lifestyle and maybe looking at your screen time.
On the topic of getting things out of pharmacists, I think we may have talked about this before, but I was away in the States there a couple of weeks ago and still amazed at the fact that over here, to try to buy paracetamol, I think you can get 12 in a pack.
I know.
They sell their version, acetaminophen, in literally 1,000 pills.
You can get 100 here in prescription for maybe responsible older ladies who have arthritis. And that is fabulous. Or if you're going to be after an operation, that you don't have to go up and down. But there is still a problem with people taking overdoses and not that huge a dose of paracetamol.
And of course, the problem with paracetamol is liver damage. Isn't it?
Very
bad. Horrendous damage to the liver.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tech saying, I'm a 46-year-old fit and healthy man. Over the last 10 days, I have a constant feeling like I am leaking pee. Nothing seems to be actually happening, but it's a very uncomfortable feeling.
So they might have prostatitis and inflammation of their prostate gland that makes them feel, or they may have a small bladder infection, makes them feel a little bit of pressure or that they need to pee.
Is that the age that the prostate makes itself known?
46 is a little young, but not too young. Prostates can make themselves known, especially if it's in your family. They can also get infected. They can also get inflamed or irritated.
Another one, this one, if ever there is a tricky and difficult one to diagnose by text. Hi. My feet are sore and tender to stand on first thing in the morning. Any advice?
If your feet are sore and tender to stand on in the morning, I'd get an autoimmune screen, because morning soreness of your feet or your hands or morning stiffness can be a sign of autoimmune kind of rheumatoid arthritis, things like that. Or maybe this person runs marathons daily and has sore feet in the morning. But I would think that that is a thing that would be worth an old blood test.
Rheumatoid arthritis?
Yes.
A friend of mine had a recent, I think, first ever significant bout with rheumatoid arthritis. I had previously had the sense that rheumatoid arthritis was a thing that sort of was a bit of a chronic annoyance to little old ladies in the past.
No.
Oh my God, no. It's awful.
It's horrible. Yeah, so it's the inflammation of kind of the lining of your joints, and your joints can become very damaged. So any time that you have a flare-up, you're damaging your joints. So the whole mainstay now is, and there's an awful lot of new high-tech drugs, not that new now, that stop your joints being inflamed so that you don't end up as a person who needs two new knees and two new hips and two new shoulders as you get older.
But agonising and utterly debilitating during the flare-up. Yeah. I had no idea it got that bad.
Absolutely.
Another one asking, my daughter started play school a few weeks ago. She has a continuous tummy bug. I'm really worried about her. Have you any advice?
Now, if it's a continuous tummy bug, isn't there vomiting and diarrhoea? I would think, you know, go and see your GP. Sometimes what they might have is a tummy bug. It settles, but then they have weeks of diarrhoea after it. And that can sometimes just be normal. If they're still thriving, eating, growing, have no temperature, give it a few weeks to settle. If they're actually sick, bring them to be seen. Sometimes you might think about giving them less maybe yogurts and things, because sometimes dairy can run through them a bit after a bug. And also looking at the amount of fibre. We give our kids a lot of fruit and veg and things, and maybe a little less of that, and a more binding potatoes and a banana for a few weeks after they're
kind of about. I thought fibre was one of those things that you could never have enough of.
Well, if you've too much fibre, then if you eat Weetabix for breakfast, lunch and dinner, you'd probably never be constipated, but you could be quite the opposite.
And life would be very dull, let's be clear. And I'm a 54-year-old woman. I've been getting more forgetful and quite scattered lately. Could this be menopause, and how do I know for sure? Also, if it is, do I need HRT?
Yeah, well, scattered is kind of very much a menopause thing. Scattered, forgetful, grumpy, sweaty.
There's a lot of us that tick those boxes and don't have menopause, Eleanor.
So, and that's the point. So, yeah, you're 54. You're undoubtedly in menopause. You've probably not had a period for a year. But you should probably, before you would start taking HRT, which you can take anyway if you want to, if you've no contraindications, and it may well make these things better, you should make sure it's that your thyroid, that you don't have an anxiety disorder, that you don't have something weird and wonderful. And that would be why you would go and have a check. Make sure your thyroid is fine. Make sure your iron is fine. Make sure that you're not getting a bit depressed. All those sorts of things can also make you forgetful and scattered.
Last one, and apologies to anybody that we didn't get to, because there is a lot that we haven't. What do you do if your child is bitten by a tick? My child was bitten by an insect on a hike, and I'm afraid that he might now have Lyme disease. This is one of those where there is so much coverage of Lyme disease, and you keep getting these stories of Irish tourist goes to X, comes back with Lyme disease, that the world is now terrified of ticks.
Yeah. That said, you can get Lyme disease, but...
Lyme disease is fairly obvious, though, isn't it? Isn't there a bullseye rash that you get that sort of says you have an issue?
You mightn't. You could just get feverish. But generally, if you go get bit by a tick, I had this incredible, sensible patient who has a ton of children. Her child got bit by a tick over a weekend. She took the tick off. She put the tick in a bag and she put the bag in her freezer. So then she came with the child and the tick. And the big fat tick, who'd obviously had a lot of her child's blood, and therefore we knew the child did need a week of antibiotics, because now at that stage was a little bit unwell. Child is perfectly fine since. So if your child is bit by tick, but you don't need to take the tick off, if you haven't seen the tick, well, then the likelihood that they have Lyme disease is pretty not. But people are very worried about Lyme's disease, and you can learn how to take them off online if you see them. But they're very rare.
There's a little tool you can buy for tick removal.
Yeah, or very tiny tweezers. But even if you do leave their mouthpieces behind, it irritates the skin. It doesn't cause you any problem, really. Only that
one of those wild things you're growing up is, if you pull off a tick and the head stays in, your leg falls off.
And the head will grow bigger back again. No, it is just that little irritation. It won't be healing up as nicely, your tick bite.
What did you do with the frozen tick when they brought it to you?
Well, I could see that it was a big fat tick that had obviously been feeding for a good while. It wasn't a tiny tick. It was having obviously been on the child for quite a while, and we knew it was a tick. So I thought it was really clever. In all of my years, I've never seen somebody do that. It was an extremely bright thing to do. She took off the tick, put it in a bag, put it in her freezer. So we knew what it was.
Eleanor, as ever, thank you very much. That is Dr. Eleanor Galvin. Happy birthday, by the way,
I should say.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.